The Bengals slug it out with the Steelers. Coverage begins Sunday morning at 9 on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
All right, here we go. It's 3:03. This is ESPN 1530. Good afternoon. My name is Mo Egger. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Hopefully you've stayed dry. We have just 1,000 things to get to today. Zach Taylor's weekly Wednesday press conference in just a second as we turn our attention to Sunday's tilt against Pittsburgh. Meanwhile, the Reds rained out today against the Pirates. That game's going to be made up on Monday afternoon. That is, I don't think, the most significant development to come from Great American Ballpark today, where after the game was banged, David Bell told reporters that he has been given a contract extension that will keep him in the Reds' dugout through the 2023 season. I have a lot of thoughts on this. I'm more interested in how you feel about this. So we're going to carve out some room for you today to weigh in on the decision to bring back David Bell, not just for 2020, but also 2023, because as last night's game unfolded the way it did, it really felt like a coffin nail. It felt like a coffin nail for the Reds season, and to a degree, kind of felt like it might be a coffin nail for David Bell, and yet less than 24 hours later, we find out that he's coming back in 2022. A couple of poll questions up about David Bell coming back at Mo Egger. Please vote. We will get to all of that coming up. But first, it's Wednesday. It's 3:05. That means the contractually obligated Zach Taylor Wednesday press conference. Here is the Bengals head coach as his team gets set to play the Steelers on Sunday.
Time for the Zach Taylor press conference, brought to you in part by 1 Hour Heating and Air on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
Coach, you're going into a Pittsburgh game where you have a chance to win two in a row against the Steelers. What do they pose as the most challenge for you?
They're a great football team. They've won a lot of games. They won a lot of games last year. You know, 2020 is 2020. We're all moving on. But you see a really physical defense. You see an offense with a lot of playmakers. They're always good on special teams. And it's going to be a tough playing on the road. So we got to get ready for the challenge.
Thank you.
Zach, a few injuries you want to run through. First, let's start with Trey Waynes. What's his availability, you think, for this week?
Yeah, we'll see as he gets out there to practice. You know, it'll be his first time practicing this week. So we'll ease him into it and just see how he feels.
Xavier Suofila?
We'll take him day to day. He will not go today. We'll limit him early this week.
And finally, T. Higgins.
Yeah, T. will be the same day to day. Don't expect him to practice today. We'll see where he's at tomorrow, and then try to get him going on Friday.
Zach, I know we asked you about your confidence in Jaxon Carman, but could we see Deonte Smith potentially get some reps at right guard as well as you kind of weigh things here with Xavier Suofila?
We'll see how the week unfolds. We do have confidence in both those guys, Jaxon and Deonte. They both showed really good things this preseason. Again, Frank's really pushed those guys on the scout team, you know, during different portions of practice where he gets his hands on them, gets to work on the one-on-one stuff. So, you know, we have confidence in both those guys if they have to play.
What impresses you, Zach, about Keith Butler over the years? He's been obviously with my Tomlin for such a long time. What impresses you about Butler and the way he runs his defense?
It's an aggressive but disciplined defense. They have outstanding players, but when those guys aren't out there, the next man up plays very similarly, you know, and so you can see that they're well coached, they're disciplined, they have the right mentality, and they cause a lot of problems for the opposing team's offenses.
Zach, obviously last year, those two matchups with them, you had two very different game plans for various, obviously, different reasons. How much do you look back at maybe what you weren't able to do in that first game, because that's when Joe quarterback, versus what you did do in the Monday night, or do you take some things away from that Monday night game?
Well, the first game, we had two early turnovers. That really hurt us. We had a punt return for fumble, so we lost a possession there in the first half, and then we were making some progress, and we fumbled at about midfield. So that's really what you take away early in that game, and that's what they feed off of, and then they score points, and then they got a lead, and then they tee off on you. So, again, we just got to be disciplined playing on the road in the noise. We got to be very detailed, and we got to take great care of the ball.
Could you compare Minkah Fitzpatrick? Is there anybody that comes to mind, jumps to mind? Minkah Fitzpatrick reminds me of this type of safety, or is he kind of in his own category?
Jesse, you know, they can go get the ball. They can take the ball away. They can cover a lot of ground on the field. They're not afraid to come down and cover. You know, they got Minkah playing some nickel this year, so he's a very versatile player. He can do a lot of things. You know, they got some really good I guess in a sense, he's a veteran. You know, he's several years into this thing. Obviously, we think of him as a veteran because he's been a great player at playing at a high level for a number of years. And, you know, so they got a lot of guys similar to him with that similar mindset where they're always on the same page.
Zach, this team in recent years has really, really struggled to win road games. Obviously, it's tough to win on the road. But does it get to a point for you where you feel like we need to change up the routine, or you need to change kind of the process in a road game to get a different mojo going or a different mindset going for a player, for the staff?
No, we just need to play better.
When you went back and went through the film, what were some of the things you identified were the reasons why you weren't able to run the ball as effectively as you did in week one?
Well, we just couldn't sustain the possessions there, you know, and so 20 carries for 60 yards, and they weren't bad runs. You know, we didn't have any bad – we're just missing probably a yard to 4 yards on a couple of those carries for a number of reasons up front, perimeter blocking, back, whatever the reason was. And, again, if you can not put yourself in that 17-point hole in the fourth quarter, a lot of times like we did, you know, in the Minnesota game, you rack up another 40 yards there in the fourth quarter. Now you have a 100-yard rushing performance. So it's all how you look at it. Look at the Raiders. They had 15 carries for 15 yards with about 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And then they get in four-minute mode and they tack some more on there. So it usually a lot of the times the fourth quarter, the outcome there determines where your rushing performance is analyzed, you know, whether it was successful or not, when you just got to stick with the plan and keep with it. And eventually the dam breaks and you get some bigger runs there.
After seeing a couple flags last week and knowing what these division games can be, do you have to revisit the taunting issue with the team this week?
We do every week. You know, we knew at some point that was going to come up to bite you. You know, ultimately you can call it a draw last game. We really just remember the one that went against us. And so, again, the players just have to understand, even sometimes they think it's harmless. They're just talking to a guy on the other team, nothing. Bad about it, but that's just what they're looking for. And so we have to be smart, play by the rules. They've sent plenty of videos. They've warned us. And, you know, they did a good job in the preseason warning us. Hey, that could have been a flag there. Make sure you talk to your players about it. And we have. We've shown all those clips, shown the clips around the league. But we can't take a penalty in those situations.
Do you think there should be a warning before a call is made on taunting? You said
they've warned everybody. You know, they've sent videos. They've warned everybody. You got to be disciplined. Celebrate with your teammates.
So no warnings. You don't think there needs to be any warnings during the game? Like, hey, you know, knock it off. The next one, it's going to cost your team big time.
Doesn't matter what I think. That's the way it's happening, and we better be ready to handle it.
Got it.
Zach, when you were reshaping your offensive line this offseason, how much did you have Pittsburgh or teams in line with good defensive fronts that y'all are going to face six times a year?
Yeah, that's just where you got to start, you know, with the ones that you're going to face six times. And we face really good fronts. You know, really our draw in the first three games have been against really good fronts, you know. And so that's been a challenge for us. It's good. It's going to break our guys in the right way. We're going to face some really good ones up front and get us battle tested. It's a long season. Our guys are going to have to endure that. And so, again, there's a lot of things that we can correct that we know we can be better at. And we're excited to get another opportunity to do that on Sunday.
When you were looking at Jackson Carmen specifically, was there something about him that you liked that would specifically with the opposition that you face in the division?
Yeah, flexibility. You know, we knew he played a lot of tackle. He's practiced at Clemson in all areas of the offensive line. We knew he could play guard. We know he's a big guy, so he's stout at the point of attack. He's also really athletic to be able to move in space. A lot of times for the guards, they got to get up to the second level and get backers cut off and be athletic enough to cut off some guys on the backside. And so he showed all those traits as a tackle on tape. And he had a high football IQ. You know, that's one thing that he processed really well. We interviewed him several times on the Zooms. Felt really good about his mental IQ. And again, it's that showed up here these last couple of weeks as we've had him in the building and at practice.
What do you think he's improved? Yeah, just kind of getting in on that. What do you think he's shown since training camp? How is he?
Everything. You know, it's these guys got to make mistakes early on. It takes some guys just a minute to get adjusted to life in this league and how we practice and the competition you're playing against. And, you know, he's no different than I mean, we sat in here and talked about Jamar for 4 weeks and the challenges he had in training camp. And every position's just a little bit different. And, again, you just got to be patient with him. and it's going to come. And you know, when Jackson does play for us, it's not always going to be perfect. We know that. We just don't make the same mistake twice. Keep learning, keep communicating with the guys around you, and good things will come. And because he's got a lot of talent, he's a smart football player, he wants to do well, so good things come with that.
How important is getting better production from your running backs in terms of blocking going to be for you moving forward with two games with pretty notable issues from them missing blocks in the game?
Well, we had the leading rusher in the NFL after one game, so I think things went well in the first week. And then the second week, we faced a really good front. I mean, I think there's more money invested in that front than any team in the league. And so we knew that there was going to be challenges. They rushed the passer. They hit the quarterback. Watching Buffalo and Oakland, these quarterbacks got hit a lot by Pittsburgh. And so we know that it's going to be a physical, bloody game in protection in the run game. We're ready for it. We've seen it over and over and over. Our guys are excited about that opportunity to showcase what they can do.
Go ahead, Jay.
So everybody likes to say it's one of 17 games. They all count the same. But for a young team trying to turn something around, playing a team that has had the success the Steelers have, does this one mean more?
Well, I think for a number of reasons, we want to have early success in this season to help ourselves build momentum. And so a road win versus a divisional team does a lot that way, you know, and then just you've got to win games in this division. That's one thing that we have got to do a better job of. And it starts this week against Pittsburgh. And so, again, our guys are excited. This is an important one. It is Pittsburgh. It's a divisional game. It's a road game. We got a lot of work in front of us here these next 4 days to get ready.
Zach, one thing that Joe said about Minka Fitzpatrick is when you read the defense and you read where he is, he's not going to wind up where you expect him to be. As an offensive play caller like yourself or Brian, how does that make it challenging going into a game like this?
It does. You know, obviously it's a little easier for me and Brian because we're watching the tape and pointing out all the things on the tape. Joe's the one that's got to be out there and process it live in person. And sometimes these safeties, they've got a kind of a quarterback mentality. They, whether it's just ingrained on them or they've been taught it, they kind of know what the quarterback's looking at, and they do a good job giving you some different looks that can put you in a tough spot. And Minka's one of those guys that does that. They have a lot of confidence in him. They obviously use him a lot of different ways because he's a smart football player and can handle it. And, you know, so again, he's a real test for us.
Last week you talked about, like, preparing for two very different types of quarterbacks. He kind of had to be prepared for both. Like, when the opposing team on the other side of the ball has a defensive player that's questionable, do you have to prepare, like, the same for someone who might – you know what I mean?
Yeah, we're going to prepare for their guys to play. You know, they got really good players. They got really good depth. And you know, they've missed guys that have just stepped in, and they really don't miss a beat. And so, again, we've got to be ready for – all their starters to play, but we know that if they don't, they got really good depth behind them, that those guys done a good job.
What is the one thing you can't let their defense do? The one or two things that you can't let them do that they've done in the past to you?
Take the ball away. You know, that's we really felt like in the first half of that first time we played them, that we had a good plan and there were some good things happening, and then those two turnovers really put us in a hole. They capitalized on them early, and we cannot allow that to happen.
Two more minutes.
You watched a lot of quarterback play over the years. You've seen Ben Roethlisberger with a lot of snaps. What does he do best? What do you respect most about Ben Roethlisberger as a quarterback?
Yeah, well, his toughness. There's not a lot he hasn't seen, and he knows he gets the ball out quick. I mean, you just watch every pass, back, ball's out. So, yeah, he got hit some last week, but he also gets the ball out a heck of a lot and gets it out very fast because he knows – he can recognize the defense. He knows where the holes are. He can get the ball quick. He also knows when to take his shots. You know, he's got some really talented receivers and tight ends, and he finds the matchup. He knows when he's got his opportunity to do it. He doesn't sit there and hold on to the ball all day. He knows how to put air on the ball and let those guys run to it, and they've done a good job of that over the years. You know, going back to Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown, all those guys, he's always done an excellent job of finding the matchups and taking shots. And so, again, that's a big challenge for a secondary and our rush to get there in time to take that stuff away.
Zach, how do you feel like the offensive line has played through two games as a whole, as a unit?
I think that they're improving, you know, and the first game, we did some really good stuff in the run game. We knew that there were going to be some challenges of protection. I've said this before, all those hits aren't on the linemen. This last game, those hits weren't all on the linemen. You know, and really, I don't care what's defined as a hit. I know that these things get categorized as hits, but people put a hand on him. Joe feels good after it. Lots made of it, you know, you know, I'm sure people watch the Bears play other teams, and they hit the quarterback. People watch the Steelers, they hit the quarterback. We're going to be ready for it. We're going to have a great plan in place. Got a lot of confidence in our linemen.
This has been the Zach Taylor Press Conference on ESPN 1530, the official home of the Bengals.
All right, 18 after 3, this is ESPN 1530. A lot more on the Bengals tonight on the Bengals Game Plan Show. 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock tonight. Dan Horton, Dave Lapham, 2 hours, wall-to-wall Bengals live as soon as we're done on ESPN 1530. Meanwhile, Reds did not play today, but they have made news. David Bell is back, according to David Bell. A number of thoughts on this. I keep coming back to one, and it's about trust. Next on ESPN 1530. 24 after 3, this is ESPN 1530. Mo Egger, so glad to be here. So glad you're here with us after missing yesterday. I was in for Lance last night. Ken Brew filled in for me. And, boy, the mood last night, it fit, frankly, the weather we've had over the last couple of days. Reds lose a game against the Pittsburgh Pirates, which, you know, look, they're certainly still mathematically alive. Cardinals play tonight. Maybe they actually lose a game for the first time in forever, and the Reds pull within 3.5 games of the wild card. But the math is not in their favor. The calendar is not in their favor. And last night, bases loaded situations were not in their favor. And I think it felt like, for a lot of people, a coffin nail for the season. I think it felt like a lot of people, a coffin nail for the Reds' managerial career of David Bell. And instead, they've chosen to give him a contract extension. This according to David Bell. And it's interesting that the Reds haven't sent out a press release. They've not made anybody in the front office available. There's been no statement from ownership or from Nick Kroll. It's just sort of been, well, the game got banged, and then David Bell told reporters, yeah, I'm coming back. That's interesting to me. And let me just get this part out of the way. I'm lukewarm about David Bell, and I think in large part that's because I don't think that the job of manager is as important as a lot of other people do. I think there are some things this year that certainly would suggest that David Bell did a pretty good job this season, right? I've also seen some things down the stretch here, just individual moves that have made me scratch my head. I would not have pinch hit as Drubal Cabrera in a critical situation last night. But I don't know. There's a lot of stuff here that I think is interesting, and maybe chief among them is the timing. The Reds have been in free fall for about a month. They've lost now, 19 out of 26 games? I'm sorry, 17 out of 26 games. This has been a terrible last month, which has taken the Reds from, I think what a month ago we would have said were playoff front runners to now playoff long shots. I don't know how much of that I put on David Bell, but I can't help but wonder this. When did they make this decision? When did whoever finally signed off on bringing David Bell back, when did that happen? Was it today? Was it yesterday? Was it at any point over the last couple of weeks as the Reds have been in total free fall? Or was it back during the middle of the summer when this team was rolling? And some even thought that David Bell should merit National League Manager of the Year consideration, which is an award that's going to go to Gabe Kapler of the Giants, and deservedly so. Was the decision made recently? During a free fall? Or was it made when this team was kicking ass? If the answer is the latter, why didn't they make the decision then? Which would have done a couple of different things. Number one, it would have removed any doubt about the job status of the manager or by extension the coaching staff. And that could have been eliminated and this staff could have come to work every single day over the final, I don't know, 6-7 weeks of the season, armed with the knowledge that, you know what, they're coming back next year. Instead, these guys have been coming to work, I'm guessing, with some degree of uncertainty about what their job status for 2022 is going to be. Also, if you would have announced that David Bell is coming back in 2022, I get a sense that the public reaction would have been a little bit more favorable than it is today. Now, I kind of feel like most, and I have a couple of poll questions that have results. I'll read to you here in a second on Twitter, at Mo Egger. By the way, Nick Kroll and David Bell are going to speak at 4 o'clock via Zoom. So we'll have some of that for you. But the timing here, man, like you decided this and announced it during what has been a complete and total meltdown by your team. What changed from the middle of the summer when you either didn't know that David Bell was going to come back or thought, you know what, we're going to bring him back, but we want to wait to make the announcement? Like, why? Why do it now? I don't necessarily think bringing David Bell back is bad or wrong. And honestly, had they decided to move on from him, okay, that'd have been fine too. I tend to think that there are bigger picture issues that the Reds have to figure out and questions they have to answer that kind of go beyond who the manager is. I feel like to a degree, this manager was thrust into a season in which he had to do his job with one arm tied behind his back because of what ownership did to the bullpen, because of some injuries, because he wasn't completely armed with a roster that was good enough to outlast the Milwaukee Brewers or, barring some sort of miraculous turnaround, make the postseason. I'm lukewarm about David Bell. But I guess what I want to know is, why'd you make the dude come to work for the last 6 or 7 months or last 6 or 7 weeks and make his coaches come to work for the last 6 or 7 weeks and have to come to work with the uncertainty of what their job status for next year is going to be? Didn't you make this decision back a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago? Or have you seen stuff during this free fall that took the summer's uncertainty and turned it into a decision to bring him back next year in the midst of what has been just a total gag job by this team? A couple of poll questions at Mo Egger on Twitter. One is simply this. How do you feel about David Bell coming back? Yes! No! Or it doesn't matter. 62% of you say it doesn't matter. The other one, though, I think is equally important, if not more. Who do you trust? Because here's the thing about deciding to bring David Bell back. Who knows how they would have replaced him? Who knows who would have made the decision about who replaces him? Who do you trust to manage the Reds more, David Bell or someone hired by the current version of the front office? This is an important question to dive into, which we will coming up at 3:45 on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. And out today, they were supposed to play the Pirates. Instead, they'll play Pittsburgh on Monday to make up game at 1:10 at Great American Ballpark. Cincinnati will host the Washington Nationals tomorrow in the first of a four-game series. They will do it with David Bell in the dugout, which will be the case next year because David says he's been given a two-year contract extension. He and GM Nick Kroll will talk in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll have that for you. Cincinnati making some roster moves. Mike Moustakas goes on the 10-day injured list with plantar fasciitis. Cincinnati is called from Louisville up. Pitcher Dowry Moretta. Moretta will be making his Major League debut. Spent the season at both AA and AAA in 42 appearances. Had 8 saves, 6 wins, and a 1.02 ERA. He was fantastic. Doug Gray, our buddy, RedsMinorLeagues.com, loves Dowry Moretta. Also, Taryn, I owe a dollar because for the first time in 3 years, I referenced a pitcher's win total. RJ Alanis has been DFA'd. Meanwhile, Reds are 4 games out of a playoff spot. Cardinals do play the Milwaukee Brewers tonight at whatever they call the Brewers' current stadium. The St. Louis Cardinals have won 10 consecutive games. Milwaukee's magic number has been stuck on 3 for about a week. Ben Roethlisberger says he is going to do, quote, everything he can to be available to play Sunday when the Steelers host the Bengals after suffering a left pectoral injury in last week's loss to the Las Vegas Raiders. Bengals and Steelers in Pittsburgh on Sunday at 1. You'll hear the game live on ESPN 1530. You'll hear Bengals game plan tonight from 6 until 8 o'clock, also on ESPN 1530. By the way, betonline.ag has released its updated odds on the first coach to be fired this NFL season. Zach Taylor, who the first couple of times this coach prop came out was pretty low on the list, relatively speaking. Right now, the odds-on favorite to be the first coach fired this year, 7-2 odds ahead of Joe Judge, 9-2, Mike Zimmer, 9-2, Matt Nagy, 11-2, Urban Meyer, 6-1, and then a whole bunch of guys with longer odds than that. BetOnline.ag. I don't think Zach Taylor is going to be the first coach to be fired, but I do think he is more of a talking point than he's ever been based on his team's performance and the way they played on Sunday in Chicago. And I do think it would be interesting to hear what the conversation about Zach Taylor's job status is if they lose to Pittsburgh and then lay a total egg against the Jacksonville Jaguars to fall to 1-3. By the way, I don't think that's going to happen. But the reality is this, man. I think more than any individual loss during Zach's tenure in Cincinnati, now 34 games, the one on Sunday, because of just how inept the offense was the one in which you pointed to the head coach the most. I think more so than any game last season, more so than any game 2 years ago. He's always had a hand in their failures, but while I never pin one game on the decision-making of a head coach, just, you know, if they're 1-3, man, dude, see. 21 minutes away from 4 o'clock. By the way, you know who's not getting fired? David Bell. A somewhat lukewarm defense of David Bell keeping his job for 2022 is next. Away from 4, this is ESPN 1530. Solomon Wilcots will be on our show in just about 20 minutes. We'll head to Pittsburgh at 5:05. We'll hear from Joe Burrow between now and then as well. Brenneman and Jones on baseball coming up in just over an hour. You know, the David Bell thing, I struggle to express a really strong opinion either way. I feel like there's so many other big picture things that have to be sorted through and answered and figured out. But I reflect on the season. We spent more time, I think, and justifiably so, talking about ownership and the front office than we did the guy in the dugout, right? I mean, when this team was struggling early in the season, folks were yelling and screaming about Bob Castellini and the current structure of the front office more than at any point than over the last 15 years. And even when the team started to play better and vaulted into contention, there was a sense that what was happening on the field was happening in spite of ownership in the front office. I detected, and I think accurately so, a tremendous amount of distrust in the current version of the Reds front office. So let me ask you this. Had the Reds moved on from David Bell this year, would you have trusted the current setup that involves Nick Kroll, that may or may not involve Bob Castellini being very hands-on, that may or may not involve Phil Castellini being very hands-on, that may or may not involve Walt Jocketty having a say? Walt is still on the team's payroll. The current version of the front office, the manager they would have hired, would you have trusted that person more to manage the Reds or David Bell? Like, I don't know if David Bell's a good manager. I think if he had really good players, he'd probably do well. And if they take some of the players away from this year's team, which has been okay, chances are he's going to do terribly. But I kind of get a sense of what he is. Like, I think he's a known quantity. I'll be honest with you, man. This team, this offseason, there's so much unknown. Like, we don't know in the aftermath of saying goodbye to Kyle Bodie and C.J. Gilman, we don't know from a player development standpoint where this franchise is going, what direction they're moving in. Are they going in more of an old-school direction? Does that mean they sort of revamp how they're training and developing players? We don't know what financial commitment to the roster ownership's going to be willing to make. We don't know which players they'll give contract extensions to. We don't know if Nick Castellanos is going to opt out or not, although it feels like the smart money is on him opting out. Like, there's so much that has to be figured out. I'll be honest with you. Adding another unknown, which is not necessarily the identity, the specific identity of the manager, but more, well, can Nick Kroll and Phil Castellini and Bob Castellini and Walt, Jockey, can those guys put their heads together? Or does one person from that group separate themselves and go, hire the next manager of the Reds, and is that person going to be any good? Let's face it, the Reds are probably not going to pay a manager top dollar. And if they did, I'd say, well, why don't you do that with players? They're probably not going to do that, right? I mean, there's probably going to be some limitations on the kind of manager they're looking for. By the way, if you have kind of decried the fact that the Reds appear to be moving away from a little bit of an analytical bent, I think it's, to a degree, good news that David Bell is back, because he's, I think, despite having a lot of old-school sensibilities and having a really good, long, major league career, I think he's got an analytical bent himself. I mean, that to me, you have to weigh that. Would you have, after a year in which we have spent a lot of time lamenting the current front office structure, wondering if Nick Kroll is qualified, wondering if Nick Kroll is going to be running this team for the time being, wondering if they're going to install a president of baseball operations, wondering about how much Bob Castellini is meddling, wondering at times about the Phil Castellini influence, wondering, I think, recently, is the direction they're going in influenced by Walt Jocketty having the ear of ownership? Like, we've expressed a lot of distrust in the front office. Moving on from David Bell, or wanting the Reds to move on from David Bell, to me at least, would have signified that you believe that this version of the front office can go and get the right manager. I don't know that I trust this version of the front office to go and get the right manager. And so that, on top of all the other unknowns, I don't think that hanging on to David Bell is the greatest thing ever. I also don't think it's the worst thing ever. Like, you might qualm with certain individual moves the guy makes. Is there another manager that would have achieved drastically better results this season than David Bell? With this team, with this roster, I don't know that there is. I don't know that this team has necessarily overachieved. Some guys have. I don't really think they've underachieved either. They're kind of where most of us thought they would be, right? They're a 78-74 win team right now. They're on pace to win about 82-83 games. That's kind of where Vegas said they would be. That's where most of us said they would be. I don't think they've underachieved because of David Bell. So based on his work this year, I don't know that he's completely undeserving of coming back. But, man, more than anything, if you want to move on from David Bell, you trust this version of the front office. And right now, I don't know that I do. My trust is earned. I don't know that I trust this version of the front office, which did not make last year's team better, which did not make the team drastically better at the trade deadline this year, which, aside from the David Bell piece today, really hasn't addressed many of the things regarding the direction of the franchise big picture. I don't know, man. I'm not even really sure we know who's running the club at this point, right? I mean, do we feel like Nick Kroll was given a chance to act autonomously this past offseason? I don't think he took the job and thought, you know what I'm going to do is give away Raisel Iglesias and Archie Bradley. I don't believe Nick Kroll took the keys to David Bell, to a Dick Williams desk, and said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give away a couple of relief pitchers. That tells me a lot of ownership influence. How much ownership influence would there have been with the next manager? And would ownership influence been limited to Bob Castellini, or would it have spread to Phil or maybe others? Again, Walt Jocketty is still lurking in this organization. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing, but like, at whose desk are the big picture decisions being made? 9 minutes away from 4 o'clock. 513-749-1530 is my phone number. We'll get to Mike. And two local lines open if you want to grab them. Also toll-free, 866-702-3776. We'll take a phone call or two next on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. Away from 4 o'clock, this is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Eggers. Solomon Wilcots will be on this show in just a couple of minutes. Quickly, Mike, what's up?
Hello.
Mike, go.
Hey, Mo. Yeah. Hey, Mo, I'm at the window down at Del Mar. Mo, I just missed the trifecta. I was so close to hitting this trifecta on this pony down here at Del Mar.
Wow. Hey, hey, where were you when we were going to sell your diamond seats?
Dude, you guys dropped the ball and did nothing.
Well, we didn't hear from you that day. And in order to give away the seats, we had to hear from you.
Cowboy, I tried calling in and I could not get through. And I show a lot of fortitude.
We think I had a charity lined up. I had folks that were willing to bid, and there was. I mean, no, seriously. And then you bricked. You no showed.
Well, no, I really.
We spent the entire afternoon putting out an APB for you. We want to give away Mike's tickets. Yeah. I couldn't give them away if I didn't have them, so I needed to get a hold of you. We didn't hear from you. We were sorely disappointed.
Well, I sorely tried, and I was sorely disappointed I couldn't get through to you guys. However, the good news is I took two homeless vets from down at the VA with me, and it was pretty gratifying, and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Well, that's good. That makes up for it.
Since I'm a veteran myself. So anyway, good to talk to you after our confrontational beginning. Okay.
I got one minute, Mike. Go ahead.
Ambiguous question. Are Nick Senzel and Trey Waynes the same people?
I have seen Nick Senzel play for a Cincinnati sports team. I have not seen that with Trey Waynes.
No, we haven't. That's why I'm very puzzled about that, Mo. Hey, and I want to stay on baseball. I really want to stay on the pennant races. These Toronto Blue Jays are blowing my mind, Mo, because they're first in OPS, they're second in team batting average, they're eighth in team ERA, and hanging by a thread. I think the pennant races this year are absolutely sensational, don't you?
The Toronto Blue Jays have a higher run differential than all but one first-place team. It's remarkable. They got Marcus Semien. Yeah, they got Marcus Semien. Obviously, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. From an offensive standpoint, they are insane. Mike, I got to run, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you, pal.
All right, a couple minutes away from 4 o'clock, the great Solomon Wilcots joins us next. All right, that's us. Whoa. 402, this is ESPN 1530. My name is Mo Egger. So glad you're here. We'll jump back to David Bell getting his contract extension. You'll hear from Joe Burrow in about 15 minutes as well. We'll head to Pittsburgh in the 5 o'clock hour as we get set for the Bengals and Steelers on Sunday. Solomon Wilcots is with us, the former Bengal, part of the Believe in Bengals podcast that he does with Adam Pac-Man Jones. You can get that on the Believe podcast network. And Solomon also obviously does a lot of work, SiriusXM. He is also a spokesperson for Aditext, which is, this is interesting, and I think it's timely given sort of what we're all dealing with here, but the topic of vaccine mandates for COVID-19 in the National Football League, and we could pivot to a discussion about that with our guy, Solly, who's with us now. It's good to have you, sir. How are you?
Doing great, Mo, and good to be on with you today.
Talk to me first about Aditext. Tell me what this does. Give folks an idea here. For people who are maybe still wondering, should I get the vaccine, or if I get the vaccine, how much am I going to actually be protected? What does Aditext do?
Well, what Aditext really does is they help you to score your immunity. And this is just really smart science. Right now, NFL players and staff, they're just like the rest of the United States population. They're faced with this binary choice mode, trying to decide between vaccination or non-vaccination. Well, the people at Aditext, they believe that knowing your immunity score, it offers a different option to help you to protect yourself against COVID-19. To tell my story very quickly, back in March, I received the J&J vaccination. For nearly 2 months, I'm walking around thinking that I'm protected from the COVID-19 virus. Well, the people at Aditext, they would score my immunity. All they did was simply they would take a small amount of blood from my fingertip, and I would submit it to them, and they had developed this process where they can measure your neutralizing antibodies, and they discovered that I had not developed any at all. I had no protection from COVID-19. So the results showed that my score was very low and that I wasn't protected at all. Then in July, I went and received the Pfizer vaccine and got my first dosage. 10 days later, I submitted a sample of blood to Aditext, and they found that I had produced enough neutralizing antibodies to be protected
from the COVID-19 virus. So this is really smart science. They've teamed up with SeerDx right in the, here in the tri-state. You can go and get your immunity scored, whether you're in Kentucky, Ohio, or Indiana. All you have to do is go to the website at www.aditxscore.com. That's aditxscore.com.
aditxscore.com. Quickly tell me how it works.
Basically, what it does is they take a sample of your blood, and they can basically test your blood for neutralizing antibodies, which is really the key. We all know about the Delta variant. The variant has what we call breakthrough cases where people have been vaccinated, but yet still they attract the variant or COVID-19. Now, they're not as sick as maybe as if they would if they didn't get vaccinated. And we're certainly advising that people do get vaccinated. But by knowing your score, that tells you if you have a proper immune level. Like, our immunity is constantly changing. As you well know, when you get on an airplane or get off a red-eye flight, you don't get enough sleep, or if you've been hanging out with your friends, your immunity is lowered because you're tired, right? Or maybe you haven't eaten right or had the proper nutrition. By using this science that Aditxscore is offering to score your immunity, you can know if your immune levels are at a significant level to fight COVID-19. And so that's really the science behind it all. I think it offers a very interesting and wonderful option for those people who might even already have some pre-existing condition and wondering if they should take the vaccine. More importantly, we should know if we have a healthy, robust immune system.
You can know your score. You can find an Aditxscore partner near you, and this is pretty much good for all across the tri-state, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, aditxscore.com. That's aditxscore.com. Make sure you check that out. Solomon Wilcots is with us. A week ago at this time, I felt pretty good about where the Bengals were going. I love the aggressive play calling. I love the way Joe Burrow played. And then I saw what happened in Chicago, where they didn't throw a pass downfield for the first half of the game. They were very not only anemic, but just non-productive and boring offensively. Where was the explosiveness we talked about last week, Solly?
I was really disappointed. You know, we can only manage the longest play was 14 yards during the first half. It was all dink and dunk. And then defenses started sitting on everything, right? And I was really concerned even last week. I talked to you about this. I thought Minnesota hit Joe Burrow way too much in the week one contest. They had 5 sacks on Burrow in that game. The Bears had another 4 sacks. And so here we are again going down this road where the quarterback's getting hit too much. And if he doesn't get hit, you and I both know we should be getting one-on-one matchups on the outside with T. Higgins and, you know, with Jamar Chase and Tyler Boyd. As long as we continue to feed the ball to Joe Mixon inside, we should be getting one-on-one opportunities outside in the passing game. I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to go with the quick passing game to get the ball out quick so he doesn't get hit. But now all it's doing is turning it into this dink and dunk small ball offense that nobody wants to see.
Right, and the whole idea behind drafting Jamar Chase was explosiveness, fireworks. We can beat teams downfield, and you did that, and you eschewed the opportunity to take an offensive lineman with the 5th pick. I think for a lot of folks, if you would have said, well, this is how the offense is going to look, they would have said, well, forget taking the wide receiver. If you're not going to have him run the routes that you drafted him to run, as good as Jamar Chase has been, go ahead and take the offensive lineman.
Man, look, I said it from the beginning. Touchdowns follow blocking, not the other way around. You protect the quarterback. You're going to create some big plays. But here we are. I don't think anyone is going to ever regret the Bengals taking Jamar Chase. He did. He showed up again. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets one-on-one on the outside. He's going to create big plays. We just got to protect with the linemen that we do have, right? And with the linemen we do have, we got to be able to run block for Joe Mixon to get him to the second level of the offense. This offense works better when it goes through the offensive line and it's run blocking prowess, and when we're feeding the ball to Joe Mixon. If you don't do that, you're not going to get enough deep shots. And here's the deal. T. Higgins got to hold on to the ball. Yeah. And then Joe Burrow can't throw the 3 interceptions in a row. Those 4 turnovers were the undoing of the Bengals, who, oh, by the way, still had a chance to win it if all we could do is tackle Justin Fields.
Yeah.
So we let those guys break too many tackles to get first downs at critical moments of the game.
I do think beyond that play and Logan Wilson not falling on the fumble earlier, that you had to walk away from that performance against the Bears pretty happy with what they did defensively. I think you had to walk away from the Minnesota game, for the most part, pretty happy with what they did defensively, especially up front. I think the way they've played over the first 2 weeks on that side of the ball does portend them having a chance on Sunday in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think Lou Anaromo's done a really good job with the defense, providing Trey Wayans hadn't played for us. You know, that, you know, when you think about signing a cornerback in free agency, that defense coordinator wants that player at his disposal, but he hasn't had him. He's had to use backup corners. And I think right now we're kind of getting by now. I think the Bengals forced Justin Fields to play poorly. I think we were on our way to forcing Andy Dalton to play poorly. They did get him out the game. I love what DJ Reader's bringing. I love what Larry Ogunjobi is bringing. I think the defensive front is doing a really good job. And now this is going to be a big week, as you well know, against Pittsburgh. I think the Bengals, they ought to smell blood in the water like they did on the Monday night game when they last played Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
They got to go in there and make the Steelers a loser. I thought they were the better team on Sunday against the Bears, and the Bengals didn't win. I think they can prove themselves to be the better team on Sunday. This would be a huge win for them.
Solomon Wilcots, one half of the Believe in Bengals podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, does that alongside Adam Jones. Here I'm on SiriusXM, and again, a spokesperson for Aditex. Get your score and expand your immune monitoring, expand your immunity, expand what you know about how the vaccine may help you. Aditexscore.com. It's always good to talk to you, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mo. All the best to you.
You got it. That's our guy, Solomon Wilcots, the absolute best, 12 minutes after 4 o'clock. You'll hear from Joe Burrow coming up in just about 8 minutes. More on David Bell here in just a second as well. I mentioned before that betonline.ag has Zach Taylor as the odds-on favorite to be the first coach let go in 2021. I don't know that I believe he's going to be let go this year. I do think the conversation can exist based on the way things unfold, but I think they have more than a puncher's chance to win the game on Sunday. I do think they'll beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. I do think they will beat the Detroit Lions. That Green Bay game asked me before it, but I don't think this is going to be a thing. If they lose a bunch of games, it will be a thing. That said, Sunday was extraordinarily sobering. And I know you could take the approach of, look, it's early, it's one game, things are going to be okay, don't worry about it. But this is a season that in many respects is more about who the head coach is and who it's going to be more than anything else, right? We talked about it for months. This season, you got to find out, is Zach Taylor the guy? When your personnel is hopefully in a position to win a championship, and they're far away from that, do they have the right coach? What edge does this head coach give them? What you saw on Sunday did not lend itself to positive answers to those questions. What we saw on Sunday was the antithesis of what this offense is supposed to be and what NFL offenses are supposed to be. I understand that this team's offensive line is not where it needs to be. I understand what the Chicago Bears were doing schematically to keep the Bengals essentially, you know, left to play inside a phone booth. But their plan this offseason to do what they did in the draft and to do what they did in free agency and to do what they didn't do in the draft and free agency was based on, I think, this sort of implication, if you will, that Zach Taylor is still going to be able to figure out how to orchestrate this offense in a way that's going to be productive enough to win football games. Nobody thought the Bengals were going to have a great offensive line this year. We thought they would hopefully have an improved offensive line, but we still thought that pass blocking might be a little bit of a problem, but it was going to be okay. We're giving Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor weapons to work with. You add to Sunday's frustration the lack of track record. I saw the stat today on Twitter. Zach Taylor's offense has scored two or fewer touchdowns in 24 out of 34 games. They've scored one touchdown or less in 14 out of 34 games. Only two teams in the NFL over those 34 games have a lower points per game average: the Jacksonville Jaguars and the New York Jets. I saw this at Wolf Cal Son. If I'm mispronouncing that, my apologies. There's no track record to point to that would say this guy offensively can bring out the most in the weapons that he has, and then armed with weapons. And I just, the narrative for months was, look, the offensive line's going to be better, but look at the wealth of weapons. Now, Joe Burrow has to play better, and it's okay to say that. Joe Burrow can't throw the picks that he threw, two of which I think were squarely on him. But that wasn't a problem in the first half on Sunday. The first half, it was, we're just going to let the Bears dictate what we do. We're going to play very vanilla, very boring, very non-explosive offense. We're going to dink and dunk. We're going to do everything we can to protect Joe Burrow, except keep a running back in the backfield. The results were terrible. The results were terrible. We're trying to find out this year if Zach Taylor can provide an advantage. Well, on Sunday against the Chicago Bears, he failed to provide a schematic advantage. Maybe he provided a motivational advantage. Maybe he provided a cultural advantage. He didn't provide much of a tactical advantage. In fact, I would say he was at a tactical disadvantage. That is the conversation from Sunday. More so than at any point in week in year one or year two of the Zach Taylor era. This is the year we're trying. Is this the guy? Well, if he's the guy, it's based on what? Offensively, to a degree, he helps provide an advantage. Especially now that he's armed with all these weapons. Where was it on Sunday? And unfortunately, because of Zach's relative inexperience as a head coach and an NFL play caller, you can't point to his track record that gives you some degree of comfort. Can't. So, yeah, he should absolutely be in your crosshairs. He's in my crosshairs. This is how it works in the year, which is all about Zach Taylor having to win football games. By the way, I mean, that game on Sunday against Chicago could be the difference between a 6-win season and a 7-win season, or a 7-win season and an 8-win season, right? And then you're going to go, wait a minute, what kept them from having the kind of year that we really thought they could have from a win-loss perspective? Well, here's a game that you look at their performance, their defense was fine against Chicago. And again, not pinning it all on Zach Taylor, but guess what, man? Joe Burrow is going to be the starting quarterback. This is a season in which Zach Taylor has to start answering questions. Does he provide an advantage to the Cincinnati Bengals? On Sunday, was the answer yes? Given that the answer is no, I will then ask, well, when is the answer going to be yes? Because on Sunday against the Bears, he lost. He gave away an opportunity to prove that the answer is yes. 18 minutes after 4 o'clock. Reds rained out today, but they've made news. David Bell's coming back. David Bell is coming back to manage the Reds in 2022. We'll have some audio of David Bell and Nick Kroll talking about this. But then there's who you're not going to hear from coming up on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. 23 minutes after 4, this is ESPN 1530. I'm Mo Egger, Richard Skinner, Local 12 in an hour. Bengals game plan tonight from 6 until 8. And if you're looking for a place to watch the game on Sunday, Hard Rock Cafe inside the Hard Rock Casino downtown. Join us. Join us for the Bengals and the Steelers Sunday at 1 o'clock. Joe Burrow has played against the Pittsburgh Steelers once. Unfortunately for him, it was not the game the Bengals won against the Steelers last year. It was a very windy afternoon at Heinz Field. Not a great performance, not a great game at all. Nonetheless, Bengals lost that game. That was the week before Joe Burrow got injured last year. He gets opportunity number two to play Pittsburgh again at Heinz Field. Joe talked with reporters earlier today.
Joe, what did you take away from that matchup with them the first time, and how disappointing was it not to maybe look and say, here's the corrections I can make. I'd like to face them again and have a chance to make those corrections.
Yeah, you know, it was a tough one the first time, and you know, I was looking forward to getting to play them again. unfortunately, it didn't happen. Got injured, and so it is what it is. But, you know, I'm planning on being here for a long time, so I plan on playing the Steelers a lot of different times.
Joe, what makes Fitzpatrick so good and so difficult to match up against?
Sorry, I couldn't hear the first part of that.
Minka Fitzpatrick, Joe, what impresses you about his game? What makes him so difficult to pass against?
You can't just expect him, you know, you can't just read the coverage and expect him to be in a certain part of the field. You know, he does a good job of understanding where his job is and does a good job of understanding, you know, whether the route concept allows him to go to a different area. You know, he's not always where you expect him to be, and he makes a lot of plays doing that.
Joe, the Steelers have led the National Football League in sacks. I think the last 3 years they had 56 from last year. That led to 27 takeaways, you know, some big numbers. Is it personnel excellence? Is it scheme? Is it a combination? What makes them difficult?
It's a combination of all of it. That's what, you know, the great defenses do. They have great players and great scheme to back it up. You know, they have, obviously, T.J. Watt and Cam Hayward. Now they got Melvin Ingram over there. You know, we played him last year too. He's a really good player. So, you know, they got a lot of different guys that can create pressure from a lot of different ways.
Joe, how do you think you've played through the first 2 weeks of the season?
You know, I think I've played decently. You know, obviously a lot of room to improve. And you know, that's what you try to do each week. You look at what you did well, what you didn't do well, and then try to improve.
Joe, a lot's been made about the offensive line and kind of their role in keeping you upright. What are some other things kind of the offense as a whole can do to make sure that the pressures when y'all drop back or go down as the weeks progress?
We just got to be better all around. I can be better. Backs can be better. O-line can be better. Receivers can be better. Coaches can be better. We can all be better. That's what you try to do each week.
You know, what's the communication like midweek as y'all kind of build towards Sunday and fixing that after the last couple of weeks? What are the conversations like among y'all as y'all kind of figure out the way for everyone to get better and move on?
You know, I think those conversations could probably go on in the O-line room. For me personally, I control what I can control and try to get the ball out fast, read my keys, and go from there.
All right, Joe Burrow chatting with reporters earlier today. Bengals and Steelers kick off at 1. You'll hear the game live Sunday on ESPN 1530, 26 minutes after 4 o'clock. We're guest-free till the top of the hour, 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. One reason why you may have wanted the Reds to keep David Bell, which they're going to, coming up next on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. It's a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. Bengals practicing today. No T. Higgins dealing with a shoulder injury. No Trey Waynes. Again, Xavier Suofilo out today with a knee. Meanwhile, Deontay Johnson, as one would expect, out for Pittsburgh as they get set for Sunday. T.J. Watt limited. Joe Hayden limited as well. Devin Bush full participant for Mike Tomlin's team. You'll hear the game Sunday at 1 live on ESPN 1530. Bengals game plan comes your way from 6 until 8 right here on ESPN 1530 with Dan Horde and Dave Lapham. Reds rained out today at Great American Ballpark. Today's game against the Pirates will be made up on Monday at 1:10. Meanwhile, the Reds will be paying attention to the Cardinals and Brewers. St. Louis comes into play tonight, leading the Reds by 4 in the hunt for the last wild card spot. Cardinals have won 10 straight games. They're in Milwaukee again tonight. The Brewers' magic number to clinch the division remains at 3. Meanwhile, David Bell has been given a contract extension. He will manage the Reds through the 2023 season. This was originally revealed by David Bell himself. You'll hear from Reds GM Nick Kroll a little bit later on. Cincinnati also had to make some roster moves. Most notably, Mike Moustakas goes on the 10-day injured list with plantar fasciitis. And Dowry Moretta, a righty pitcher who has had an outstanding season pitching in Chattanooga and AAA Louisville, has been called up from Louisville. So there you go. 26 away from 5 o'clock. Let's take a phone call. TJ, you're on ESPN 1530. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Mo. I got a question for you. Is there any other major sports city in this country that has the worst incompetent ownership groups running those teams?
Collectively combined?
Correct.
Off the top of my head, I no. There's no city that has the such short track record of success combined that that we have.
It's ridiculous. It's almost like I am no longer willing to be a fan of teams who seemingly engage their fans with psychological warfare year in and year out. It's false promises, empty expectations, and it's just the same. They successfully beaten the morale of the city, the winning morale of this city, their fans, into submission to where the fans now just accept mediocrity. It's really sad.
I think there are some who accept mediocrity. I think more and more so you have a very vocal group of people who are no longer willing to accept mediocrity. And I think one of the most interesting dynamics, specifically as it relates to the Cincinnati Reds, is look, this year was supposed to be the payoff, right? This year was supposed to be last year too. They dragged us through this long rebuild, which took way too long. But here it is. Now, here comes the payoff. And the payoff was 21 scoreless innings against the Braves last year and a September meltdown. That's the payoff. Now, I don't think the Reds are going to be terrible next year. In fact, their starting pitching might actually be quite good. But at the same time, it's another year of telling people they have to wait. And at some point, when you don't deliver a payoff after you've asked for people's patience, they're going to go away. And I do think the Reds, to a degree, are kind of in danger of losing some people that have just thrown their hands up to say, look, I'm tired of waiting. You didn't deliver on the patience that we gave you. You didn't give us a payoff, and now we're moving on to something else.
Yeah, that's already happened with me. There's only one sports organization that I roll with in Cincinnati now, and that's, of course, the University of Cincinnati Bearcats. Mm-hmm. I'm fully behind them, and I urge other disenfranchised fans to do the same.
Yeah, look, I mean, in terms of the hierarchy of who's doing it right the most, it's UC football. I don't think there's any getting around that. Now, you know, I mean, you could certainly say a lot to the college basketball programs in this town. Xavier's dipped recently. UC basketball's got a little bit of a rebuild in front of them. But, I mean, they're at the top of the mountain in terms of, I think, delivering on what people are looking for, which is a consistently good product with Luke Fickell as the head coach. And the Reds haven't done that. The Bengals haven't done that. FC Cincinnati is not doing that. It's clearly UC football. And I think to a degree, I mean, look, their level of success here has coincided with the Bengals falling off the map competitively post-2015, the Reds rebuild taking way too long, and this year, to a degree, not living up to expectations. And I think to an extent, UC football has been the, and appropriately so, been the beneficiary of that.
Well, even back in 08 and 09, when the Orange Bowl years or whatever, Tony Pike's year, it's like the city almost discredited or discounted the Bearcats' football success. Like, oh, that's a cute story, but is it sustainable? If you go back that far, I think the university itself and the infrastructure that has built it, the football program, I think it's pretty evident that this football program as a whole is legit.
Yeah.
And warrants more support locally.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know that they suffer from lack of support. I mean, I think UC football, you know, for years, we only talked UC football when people wanted to talk about why they did or didn't go to games. We don't do that anymore. I mean, now we talk about the teams and the matchups, and moving into the Big 12 was only going to amplify that. I do think that the program, in terms of how we talk about it, is in a much different place than it was in 2008, 2009. Because I even felt back then, and I'd say this as somebody who's been a UC fan since I was in high school, those years it was greeted as this nice, fun, different sort of fleeting thing that we're all going to latch onto. But you didn't have a lot of people who I think were really following the program, the nuts and bolts of the program, to the extent that they are now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Mo. I appreciate you.
Okay, you got it, TJ. I appreciate the conversation. And, you know, I think from a Reds perspective, I talked about this last night. I did extra innings for Lance. Look, the Reds mathematically are not eliminated. Let's get that out of the way. And there is still a chance, I suppose, it's not a very good chance, that they overcome the odds and get to the postseason. That certainly would defy the odds, but that may happen. But to me, organizationally, big picture, this is the problem. You just made people, and I know some of the characters have changed, but you just asked people to wait through this interminably long rebuild that started too late and lasted way too long. And you asked people to be patient. And you asked people to bear. And by the way, some people said, no, I'm not. I mean, the Reds did have a 34-year low in attendance in 2018. But all along, the message was, hey, there's going to be a payoff. The payoff may still come. Again, I don't think the Reds are going to be awful next year. By any stretch of the imagination, next year's starting staff, you might have Luis Castillo and Sonny Gray and Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo. And Wade Miley's been terrible this month, but maybe Wade Miley is back. And Vladimir Gutierrez, Tyler Mahle, who next year they have to figure out a way to only have him pitch road games. But, I mean, still, like this like 2020, 2021 was pointed to as we're going to have Nick Castellanos, and we have the first couple of years of Mike Moustakas, and Gino's in his prime, and Votto's still here, and this year was resurgent. And so this season, and last year to a degree, and you can't talk about last season without mentioning COVID, but still, this was the payoff, right? Do you feel paid off? Do you feel like you've been given the proper payoff to wading through one 90-plus loss season after the next? An underwhelming 7-seed last year in a truncated season that saw the Reds score 0 runs in the postseason, and a year this season in which the division race was basically settled by July, and their dash to get the last seed in the National League has unraveled amid a meltdown over the final 3 or 4 weeks. So you're kind of stuck between this incredibly underwhelming past and yet a lot of uncertainty about where this franchise is going next. And so the David Bell thing for me, I don't think David Bell did a terrible job this year. I don't. And I don't object to him being the manager next season, especially because I don't know what would have been behind door number two. But there's some stuff this ownership group and this front office has to start figuring out. And frankly, to a degree, if it wants to repair its relationship with the public, be transparent about. Last year, we saw cost cutting because they made the excuse they lost money. By the way, I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Reds' attendance figures for 2021 have exceeded their projections for this year. What's this offseason going to look like in terms of player acquisition, player retainment, making trades, building up the roster more, tearing it down? Will there be contract extensions? This Kyle Bodie thing, does it signify a switch towards non-data-driven evaluation and development? Who's running the franchise? How involved are Bob and Phil Castellini? How involved is Walt Jocketty? Are they going to go absolutely all in to try to win next season? Because they didn't this year. And if the answers to those questions aren't met to anybody's satisfaction, I think there's two things that are going to happen. Number one, you're going to have more people that go, look, man, I tried. I sat through your last rebuild. Now I'm done. I can't. And I also think it's not going to matter who the manager is. 17 away from 5. We'll get to Jeff. We'll get to Dominic. Locally, 513-749-1530. Toll free, 866-702-3776. Brennan and Jones on Baseball is coming up in just about 10 minutes. We'll head to Pittsburgh. Roethlisberger is going to play on Sunday, right? There's no human being alive who doesn't believe that he's going to sit the game out on Sunday afternoon. We'll examine what's happened to that team offensively. Is their offensive line as bad as I think? What about their injury situation? And could the Bengals get a second consecutive win against the hated Pittsburgh Steelers? That coming up at 5:05, plus Richard Skinner at 5:20, and a lot of room for you between now and 6 on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. Brennan and Jones on Baseball, just a couple of minutes away. Bengals game plan, 6-8 tonight as soon as we're done. Dan Horton, Dave Lapham on ESPN 1530. Taryn, how come we don't play this more often? My favorite song of 2003. 21 questions. What did he say? This song sort of does fit. I mean, look at it outside. I know it rains during the summer, And you know, people can fight me on Twitter because I love all the sports we have in fall, but fall is a season. Just in a month, it's going to be dark early. I don't like it. Look at this outside. If you're in the greater Cincinnati area, if you've looked out your window, if you've gone outside at any point over the last, 48 hours, just this, does this look nice? I think it's sort of brought the mood down. Has it brought the mood down? Are you not having fun, Taryn? You're not having fun. Okay. I'm having fun. This job is fun, but looking out the window on a day like today as I do it, not so much fun.
I'm going to be honest with you. Today, while I was late, I didn't want to get in my bed.
Oh, that's great. That's nice.
I didn't leave my house until 1:45.
I noticed. Trust me, I've had days like that.
This weather
plays a huge role. Look, I did something similar. I dropped my daughter off at daycare, and it was like 9:30. And I looked outside and said, I'm going to lay in bed for about 45 minutes. And I did that. This weather is depressing. Sorry. Do we have time? We do? Okay, good. Dominic is in Mount Washington. Hi, Dominic.
How are you, Mr. Mo?
I'm good. What's up?
So, talking about Reds management, two things popped in my head. One was the hopeful silver lining if the Reds do not make the postseason is that the leadership cannot make the excuse, see what we did with less. And then make no changes like they make no changes 85% of the time. And the other was, if mama ain't happy, no one's happy, I believe was the quote Mr. Castellini used in his press conference when he took over.
Right.
I don't remember if he was referring to his mother or his wife. And if it's his wife, is he divorced?
Well, no.
Because she's miserable. I'm basing it solely on the Reds.
Yeah, no, I hear you. No, they celebrated, I think, their 55th wedding anniversary. So she's happy to that degree. No, look, I mean, you talk about that press conference, and here's like Bob Castellini bought the team, and he said this. This is irrefutable. This happened. He said, we will bring championship baseball to Cincinnati. That did not come with qualifiers. It did not come with, well, if we can afford it or if the economic conditions in this sport change. It was a promise that was delivered without any sort of footnotes, qualifiers. There were no addendums, nothing else. Well, it's been 16 years and it hasn't happened. And, you know, I think you're being fair if you hold against them. Look, you said this was going to happen, and instead, here's what we're dealing with. And I think that's what you're doing. I know it's what I'm doing, and I think it's what a lot of people in this town are doing. And typically, I'm not the guy that wants to hear much from ownership until what you chose to do, what you directed your people to do, led to this team not having as good a chance to win as it could have had. Now I want to hear from ownership. And I don't think I'm going to be holding my breath to hear it.
Oh, yeah, no, most definitely. But like I said, I'm hoping to remove the caveat or that back out of the, you know, just saying, oh, look what we did with spending less money and we got to the postseason, whether we would have gotten bludgeoned by the Dodgers or not. But, you know, just to remove
well,
that.
Well, and you know what you might get now, though, is the injury list becomes more and more populated. We were hurt last year. Come on,
yeah.
We were hurt. Okay, give us a break.
Good thing they're not in charge of bolstering the roster to avoid that, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, their depth got tested, and it failed the test. I mean, there's no getting around it. And this is not merely a reflection of what's happened over the last month. What's happened over the last month is a lot of guys that you expected to hit haven't hit. And a lot of games that you think they could win. Look, I'm not blaming Bob Castellini or Nick Kroll or anybody else for, you know, last night, seventh inning, 3-2 game, you load the bases, nobody out. You expect Castellanos or Votto to at least tie the game, not to mention Kyle Farmer, who otherwise had a good night, and that didn't happen. I mean, there's a lot that has, you know, happened over the last couple of weeks that you would have expected this team, the way it played for much of the season, to be able to get done, and that didn't happen. At the same time, as you do turn the page to next year, again, David Bell coming back, fine. It doesn't bother me. I think David Bell did a decent job this year. I struggle to say he did a great job. I think he did a decent job this year. And I say that in large part because I do feel like he was handicapped by some of the decisions made above him. Okay, well, what decisions will the people above him be making now to give David Bell a better chance to succeed next year? And I would be asking that question regardless of who the manager was, which is why who the manager is, that decision doesn't really move me that much. 7 away from 5 o'clock, Brenneman and Jones on baseball next. Just quickly here as I listen to that, Bengals game plan is on in 1 hour. The guy with the deep voice just referred to the voice of the Bengals as Dangerous Dan Horde. I've known Dan for like 21, 22 years. I've worked with him for like the last 20 years. I'm not calling him Dangerous Dan Horde. Just so we're on the same page. You're going to hear Nick Kroll, who runs the Reds, we think, and David Bell. Reds did not play today because it's never going to stop raining. But David Bell gets a contract extension. You'll hear from the Reds manager. You'll hear from Nick Kroll. And Nick Kroll's the Reds GM, and he might be the president of baseball operations. I don't know. All I know is David Bell is going to be back next year, and we have poll questions we have to address on Twitter, at Mo Egger, regarding that development today. But David and Nick coming up in just about 30 minutes. Meanwhile, we are getting set for the Steelers game on Sunday, 2-1-1 teams, and to give us some insight on a team that I think could really go in either direction this year is a guy who works with Ike Taylor, who we've had on the show before, Mark Bergen. He is the host of the Believe in Steelers podcast with Ike Taylor. It's part of the Believe Podcast Network. Mark is also on Twitter. You can follow him at MD Bergen. Bergen is spelled with an I at the end, and he's with us now. It's good to have you, Mark. How are you?
Mo, how are you? Thanks for having me on. We got AFC North football this weekend.
We do. And look, you're not going to be able to convince me that there's any way that Ben Roethlisberger's not going to play, right?
I'm with you there, especially with what we've seen from Mason Rudolph in the preseason, dating back to the 2019 season. Like, I look at it this way, right? If he were Big Ben's heir, would we know who Duck Hodges is? And Duck Hodges is no longer an NFL quarterback. He's not even in the league anymore. So I fully expect Big Ben to play even despite the pec injury on Sunday.
All right, so they win week one at Buffalo, and people are like, all right, the Steelers are back. And you know, they won that with the special teams play. The offense wasn't great but wasn't terrible, but that's a pretty good win. They come home, they lose to the Las Vegas Raiders. I'm not sure if that's a bad loss. I'm not sure what to make of the Raiders at this point. Through two games, have the Steelers done anything to overly impress you or make you overly concerned?
Depends on what side of the ball you're talking about, Mo, because now the injuries are mounting on the defensive side of the ball. But I would like to see the Steelers get back to the running game. They spend a first-round draft pick on Najee Harris out of Alabama. But if you look at the first 2 weeks of the 2021 season, only 114 yards rushing for the Steelers compared to two games for the first two games of last season at 250. Now, you've got a young offensive line, Dan Moore, the left tackle, and the center, Kendrick Green, both rookies, the left guard, Kevin Dotson, a second-year player for the Steelers. So they're young up front. But part of the reason you brought in Matt Canada to run this offense as an offensive coordinator is Randy Fichtner wasn't getting it done a year ago. But Big Ben is doing a lot of the same things we saw last year, getting the ball out the fastest release time of any NFL quarterback through 2 weeks of the season. You might look at only the four sacks, but he has the fastest release time if you look at the next-gen stats. But something I would like to see the Steelers do is commit to the running game, something we haven't seen for a long time. One other stat I'll hit you with as well. October the 8th of 2020 marked the last time the Steelers ran the ball more in a football game, more than they passed it. You got to go back to week 6 of last season. It's something I'd like to see the Steelers get more of a balance. I'd like to see them actually have a game where they run the ball more than they pass it.
Do they have the offensive line to be able to do that?
That's the million-dollar question. And if you look at the investment along the offensive line, only $12 million this season along the offensive line. That is dead last in the NFL. When you look across the division, Cleveland spends $50 million. The Ravens double what the Steelers spend. So, yes, they are young. Yes, there aren't the first-round picks. There aren't the free agent signings. But you'd like to see these players gel. And in subsequent weeks, beyond this week 3 game against Cincinnati, you want to get Zach Banner back at that tackle position, put Chukwuma Okorafor back on the bench. They're hoping for that in week 4 against Green Bay, but we'll see.
We watched Ben Roethlisberger at the end of the season last year, and it wasn't just in that Monday night game against the Bengals. To me, watching him, I got a real, like, late 2014 Peyton Manning vibe from him, where, you know, Peyton came back the next year, and he was a shell of himself. And I feel like you could sort of see the early seeds of that being planted late in 2014. Now, it's worth mentioning, in 2015, as bad as Peyton was, or as okay as Peyton was, his team still won the Super Bowl because they had a dominant defense. Is Ben Roethlisberger going to be good enough by the end of the season, assuming that he's healthy? And that's maybe a heck of an assumption to make. But are we really trusting him at this stage in his career to win football games in late November, in December, and into January?
That's the million-dollar question. And especially in year 18, you look at it, you've got a tough division. This was a division where we saw three playoff teams a season ago, and Pittsburgh actually won the division, which a lot of people forget about, considering they absolutely got walloped by the Browns in the playoffs. But in year 18, that's the million-dollar question. If he has the time to get the ball to his skill position players, they have some depth at the receiver position. Deontay Johnson is hanging on to the football thus far through 2 weeks of the season. Chase Claypool looks to build off a rookie year where he tied a Steelers franchise record for most touchdowns as a rookie. You've got Juju Smith-Schuster, who's in a contract season, along with James Washington and Eric Ebron. All three of those players in contract seasons, they're going to want to ball out. So Pat Freiermuth, the rookie tight end as well, you've got the skill position players. It's just, will the line give Big Ben enough time to be able to do that? Now he's dealing with this left pec injury. You've got, a questionable offensive line up front from the Steelers, and you have a quarterback who in year 18 is not nearly as mobile as he used to be. So that's really the million-dollar question right there. And at least through 2 weeks, I'd say the answer is no. Depending on what happens in week three and in week four when they play Green Bay, we might be having a different conversation.
Mark Bergen is the host of the Believe in Steelers podcast with Ike Taylor on the Believe Podcast Network. The Bengals have Mike Hilton. Why didn't the Steelers make more of an effort to bring him back?
Money. I mean, they also got rid of Steven Nelson. And so Mike Hilton was a guy a year ago, both my co-host Ike Taylor and I advocated for him to go to the Pro Bowl because he's making plays in the backfield, tackles for losses, sacks, interceptions. Other than Minkah Fitzpatrick, Cam Hayward, and T.J. Watt, this was an absolute playmaker for the Steelers a season ago. He plays that nickel position, so when you've got five DBs on the field, you slide a linebacker off the field. He comes in, he's able to make plays in the box. He's able to make plays in coverage. I know he's only got two TFLs thus far this season for the Cincinnati Bengals, but look for him to get his first sack, that first interception. He's going to know a lot of this Steelers scheme as well. He's going to also be able to pass that along to his Bengals teammates this season. You're trying to break my heart a little bit here. I was sad to see him go in free agency, but he was an absolute playmaker for the Steelers this season. I was happy to see that he got paid what he's worth this past offseason.
Mark Bergen on Twitter, at MD Bergen. Bergen spelled with an I at the end of it. I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Mo, thanks for having me.
Mark is host of the Believe in Steelers podcast with Ike Taylor on the Believe Podcast Network. Bengals and Steelers on Sunday at 1 o'clock. The game live on ESPN 1530 with pregame starting at 9:05. And a ton on the Bengals tonight on the Bengals Game Plan Show with Dangerous Dan Horde and Dave Lapham coming up 6 to 8 tonight right here on the official home of the Bengals, ESPN 1530. You'll hear David Bell and Nick Kroll talk about what the Reds chose to do. And I think that the timing of this is fascinating. And it's not that the timing is wrong, but they've announced that David Bell is signing a two-year contract extension, which, for me, fine. The Reds could have moved on from David Bell, and I don't think I would have viewed it as a huge crime, and they chose to keep him. And I don't think he did a terrible job this year. I don't think he was really equipped to win. There were times where an individual move or two made me scratch my head, like pinch hitting Asdrubal Cabrera. By the way, Asdrubal Cabrera Reds jersey this winter, the hot go-to item for anybody who wants to be ironic. But anyway, David Bell is coming back. The timing of this is kind of interesting. And I don't know that we're going to get this answer when we hear Nick Kroll in just about 20 minutes. But just this has gone over, I think, for a lot of Reds fans, kind of like a lead balloon. Let's face it. This team has been in free fall for the last couple of weeks. perhaps the most frustrating loss of all that they've suffered here over the last couple of weeks was last night's 6-2 to the Pirates at home, who they had beaten 13 straight times. A night in which Tyler Mahle started fast, finished slow, but more than anything else offensively, this team just continues its funk. A couple of bases loaded, nobody out opportunities that only produced one run between them. And so that combined with the Cardinals win last night, if you're a Reds fan, you're in a crappy mood, man. And I am too when it comes to this team. And then less than 24 hours after that loss, they announced David Bell's coming back. Again, it doesn't bother me that much. I don't really, I admit, I'm supposed to have strong feelings about everything and have hot takes. I don't have strong feelings about David Bell. I think did okay this year, but at the end of the day, I don't think the identity of the manager matters as much as what the front office does, what the baseball ops people do, and whether or not players who are on this year's team play better, or if they find players who will play better than the guys on this year's team. But think of the reaction that this news was received with today compared to, I don't know, late July or early August for the chunk of the summer that the Reds were playing really well. I think this would have been met with at least some degree of enthusiasm. But also I wonder, like, when was this decision made? Did they just make it like over the last couple of weeks as the team has been spiraling out of control? Well, that tells me they were undecided this summer and then said, well, we want to wait and see. Wait and see how the team plays later in the season. Well, the team played poorly later in the season, and then so did they make a decision based on that? Or was this already decided months ago? What I wonder is, had this been settled in July or August, how could things have played out differently had this David Bell contract situation been taken care of? How often did David Bell and his coaches come to work not knowing what their job status for next year was going to be, and how did that impact their performance? How did that impact the team's performance? I'm not saying it had an adverse effect. I think it's a fair question that we're probably never going to get a real answer to. Would this have been better being announced in July or August? And for a franchise dealing with a lot of uncertainty, you put it behind it and we move on and let's go ahead and try to get to the postseason. And regardless of what happens, here's who the manager is going to be. And from a PR perspective, to whatever degree you think that matters, the reaction would have been a lot different 6 weeks ago, I think, as opposed to the reaction by some today. But I also think the reaction you're getting has a lot to do with the fact that I think most of us kind of realize that who the manager is a little bit less important than the people directly above the manager doing the right things to give this manager a legitimate chance to win. 15 minutes away from David Bell and Nick Kroll, but first, our buddy Richard Skinner from Local 12. He's next, ESPN 1530. After 5, this is ESPN 1530. Hey, David Bell and Nick Kroll coming up in 10 minutes. You excited for that? But first, Local 12's Richard Skinner, local12.com, on Twitter, at local12skinny. And with us now, are you excited to hear some David Bell and Nick Kroll?
Can't wait. If some of the quotes I read tweeted out are going to be any indication of that. I do want to answer your poll question. I didn't get a chance to do it on the Twitters, where you asked the question of who would you rather have managing the Reds, David Bell, or someone this organization hires. I was thinking Fiona. I mean, that's the worst thing. You know, you could do worse.
I wouldn't object to that. I wouldn't object to that at all. But that's the thing, right? If you move on from David Bell, God knows A, who you're going to get, B, who's actually going to be making that decision, and I'm not really sure that I would trust them to do better than David Bell.
Well, here's the thing too, and as much as David Bell kind of sits back in place for the 3-run homer, you can have a bench coach make out the lineup card. She can just sit there then. They're not going to put any plays on, so you don't have to worry about that. And then when it comes to bullpen time, you put like a hunk of food on one reliever's name, a hunk on another, see where she goes. That's the guy you bring in at that point. It can't be worse.
It really can't be worse. Somebody does have to alert the umpires that we need a replay review, but you can get a bench coach, I guess,
Sure. Freddie Benavides can do that.
Somebody also has to come out and protect the players when they're about to get ejected.
That's a Delino DeShields move for me. He's a tough little guy.
Very good. I'll see if we can run that past the folks at Great American Ballpark. T. Higgins okay? Is he going to play? What's with his shoulder?
I didn't go today, and that always is alarm bells for me when a guy doesn't go on a Wednesday. You know, then to me, it's literally, okay, what does he do on Thursday? If he's limited, then okay, I feel better. But it was a pretty quick, you know, we'll take this day. When I hear the day-by-day on a Wednesday and a guy misses, I usually don't feel very good about that. But, you know, he did bounce back and played in the game after he got hurt. So maybe that's a good enough sign. They need all hands on deck for this one, man.
All right. So, you know, to use the Marvin Lewis, which I don't mean to do to you, but the whole I see better than I hear.
Sure.
Zach Taylor talks today about having a lot of confidence in their offensive linemen. What I watched on Sunday did not suggest that he has a lot of confidence in his offensive linemen.
Well, and I think the fact that what they did, too, with the schematics of going empty and trying to get the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands quick and then not taking shots down the field – you know why you didn't take shots? Because you don't have confidence in those linemen holding up. And so that's talking out of both sides of your mouth, in my opinion. It's great you can say that. And he's right. And if you think about it, not all the 9 sacks are on them.
Right.
You know, running backs have missed a couple. There was a tight end that missed one in the Vikings game. There was a wide receiver that didn't run a screen pattern when they were supposed to be running the screen, so the lineman released. I think there was one against Minnesota. There was a free blitzer on Joe, and I always think that's on the quarterback to get rid of the ball there. So it's not all on those guys. But, again, that schematic on Sunday told me you're scared to death of good defensive fronts or good defensive front sevens, and you're willing to kind of play this game in a phone booth in order to protect your quarterback. And, you know, maybe they learned a lesson. Maybe if they go empty again, they start chucking that thing down the field and saying, to heck with it, we'll throw 10 deep balls and hopefully connect on 3, and our quarterback will get hit a few times, and we'll have to live through it. But you can't play both. You can't suddenly have a schematic like that and then tell me you're good with your offensive line, because you're obviously not.
Well, and this isn't some patchwork offensive line of dudes they pulled off the street or on the practice squad.
That's right.
These are the guys they chose to go with. They might not have a game, especially if T. Higgins is injured on Sunday. They might not have a game ever in Zach Taylor's time as the Bengals head coach where they are as healthy as they were on offense on Sunday against Chicago.
No, that's right. I mean, that was literally the guys that you had penciled in coming out of training camp, starting at each one of the positions you had them starting at. And you're right, that doesn't happen. And here we got moving forward this week. You might be without Xavier Suafilo. You might be without T. Higgins. So, I'm just, the thing for me, and I wrote about this, and I think Doc maybe is leaning this direction because he was asking some questions. I'm just trying, what do you want to be on offense? Do you want to be a team that lines up with 2 tight ends on a, you know, 25 of 60 snaps and run the football like you did against Minnesota and have your quarterback under center and doing play action? Sure seemed to work then. Or if you want to be a 5-wide team or a spread team in an empty team, that's fine, but you can't play offense in a phone booth. But the thing is, what do you want to be? Stop worrying about other teams and do you.
Well, and that was the thing on Sunday. For how they looked lined up, I mean, the first couple of plays, I'm going, okay, here we go. This is what we talked about all offseason. And then for the longest pass play for 30 minutes to be 11 yards, it just
right.
What they were showing and what they were doing were in direct polar opposite to each other.
And at the same time, again, you're trying to do that to avoid Joe getting hit, and yet Joe's still getting hit because he talked about it a little bit he did today. First possession, first progression covered. Second progression covered. Oh, can't get to my third progression. So, you know, and maybe the lesson was learned. And maybe, honestly, they did learn the lesson late of, you know what, we got some guys that can get down the field. Let's just chuck it. Let's do it. And I'm not telling you to sit there and throw 30 bombs like it's backyard football on 30 snaps, but it's got to be – there's got to be some healthy fear put in defensive backs that, look, this guy can run by me. If you go back to the T. Higgins route, the interception, the second interception Joe threw, that defensive back had his eyes in the back. How many times do you see guys play trail technique in this league? It's all the time. They're rarely looking back in the backfield. He's sitting there looking, going, oh, you're going to run a stop route, and I'm going to jump it when you run the stop route. And Joe threw it because what did the corner have? He had no fear that T was going to run by him, and they should have fear that T can run by him because he did it earlier in the game on the post pattern they didn't connect on.
The Suafilo injury may force their hand to do something, but to me, if I have players I don't trust, I'll play some other guy. So if you don't trust the guards you have, why not play Smith or Carmen?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I really am wondering this, and it's not even worth asking this question, but I really am wondering if maybe they weren't going to be leaning in the direction of Jackson Carmen anyway. Maybe not for this game, maybe not just because it is Pittsburgh on the road, and what a tough spot for a rookie to take his first NFL snaps, but I think that move was coming sooner rather than later. Xavier's not played all that well. Your eyeball test will tell you that. If you
are a big believer in PFF grades like I know you are, that will tell you that as well and reaffirm it. So it's not just your eyeball seeing one thing and it's just arbitrary. There's some data that backs that up. So I do think that was probably coming sooner rather than later. Maybe not this week, but as you mentioned, maybe it forces your hand this week to say, let's just do this and roll with it.
And the thing is, I'm not sure. We've talked often this offseason about, well, they're going to have to outscore people. I don't think that's going to be needed this Sunday. A,
right.
I think the Steelers have all sorts of offensive issues. B, I love I like the way this defense is playing.
That's the thing. I think as you watch this evolve more and more, as long as that defense stays primarily healthy, I think that's the other good part. I don't think you have to worry about saying, well, we got to find a way to score 30 points every week. It's nice if you can do that for sure. But I think you can kind of let your defense, you know, kind of keep you in some games. And they have certainly, you know, go back to the Minnesota game. I still don't know how that would have ended up if they hadn't gone four on the fourth and one at their own 30 because the defense was dominating at that point, and it allowed Minnesota back, and it changed the momentum of the game. I mean, this defense has played really well for two games. I loved what I saw in training camp. That doesn't always dictate to the regular season when it matters and you got to tackle and you got to cover and then they can scheme against you. But I'll tell you, I think they've played extraordinarily well to this point, and I got a lot of confidence going forward as long as they stay healthy.
All right, so Fiona to be the Reds manager, and very good. You know what? Why not?
I mean, what's it going to hurt?
Who do you think would be better hitting, Fiona or as Drubal Cabrera?
Well, I would say this. Between Fiona, myself, and you, we have as many hits in less at bats than Drubal Cabrera does at this point. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah, okay.
We'll run that past David Bell now that he's locked in forever. I appreciate it as always, man. Thanks so much.
You bet. See ya.
Richard Skinner, local12.com is where you can read him. He is also on Twitter, obviously, at local12skinny. Okay, Reds were rained out today. Is it going to stop raining at any point? Ever? Am I ever going to... Do I have to wait till like next May to see the sun? No. So no baseball game today, but baseball news. David Bell's back in 2022. You'll hear from David. You'll hear from Nick Kroll, and we'll hear from you on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. Of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. T. Higgins did not practice today. He's got a shoulder injury. Obviously, his status for Sunday hasn't officially been determined. Xavier Suofilo also didn't practice today. No Ben Roethlisberger. He's got a pectoral problem. I bet you my house Ben Roethlisberger is going to play. Bengals and Steelers, 1 o'clock Sunday. Dan Hort, Dave Lapham have Bengals game plan tonight, 6 until 8 live on ESPN 1530. Reds rained out today. The game that was scheduled for this afternoon will be made up on Monday at 1:10 against the Pirates. Cincinnati will be home tomorrow. Assuming it's not going to be raining... The Washington Nationals will be here for the first of four at Great American Ballpark. Reds obviously still four games out of the last wild card spot behind the Cardinals. St. Louis plays the Brewers in Milwaukee tonight. Brew Crew, if you will, still have a magic number of three. Mike Moustakas goes on the injured list with plantar fasciitis, which I've had and just absolutely sucks. And righty Dowry Moretta, who's had a phenomenal season at AA and AAA, has taken his place on the active roster. All right, so David Bell gets a contract extension. That's the other big headline of the day, 2022, 2023. He's back. He spoke just about an hour ago along with the general manager of the club, Nick Kroll. Here is a large part of that media gathering from earlier today.
Nick, what led you to the ultimate decision to add two more years for David's contract? And also, what is your contractual situation?
I mean, I think we've talked about this all year, just to extend David. He's done a great job with the team we have to get, right now. And, you know, I think that it's just, you know, natural that he would be leading us forward. I mean, we made the playoffs last year. We had a good run this year, still have a chance. And you know, I think it, for us, it's you know, we've got a guy in the spot that that knows how to run a major league clubhouse and a dugout, and you know, we feel he's the right guy moving forward. Well, myself, I don't have it. Nothing's disclosed, and I would keep it that way.
Nick, can you talk some about the timing of this? It strikes some of us as a little peculiar that you'd wait this long. Maybe this should have been. I don't know when the team was really playing well. Anyway, can you talk a little about the timing of the announcement?
Yeah, it's the end of the year. It's just, you know, we've talked about this for some time, and it's just, this is when we finalized it. So that's why I don't have anything else to say on that.
David, can you speak just to kind of what this means to you to stay here, really in your hometown for another couple of years as the manager?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible honor to be in the organization, to work for this organization, to be in this position to manage the team, to work with this group of coaches and Nick and his staff, and then, you know, ultimately just loving, you know, every opportunity I have to be with these players. So for me, it's really just, you know, thankful to be able to continue really all the work that we've done together. You know, there's been a lot of progress in this organization. I've been, I've been fortunate to be a part of that team, and, you know, to know that we can continue that. You know, our focus, the only focus that I have right now really is finishing this season strong and you know, accomplishing what we set out to do at the beginning of the year. So that's the focus. And now it's nice to know that we'll be able to continue that and, you know, continue, you know, striving for a lot of success, much success for years to come.
For Nick, just kind of overall the direction. I mean, you two coordinators left from the minor league side last weekend. Just where do you kind of see the direction of the organization going?
That's a good question, Bobby. I think that, you know, that's something that I think I've seen speculated that we're going to go away from data, and that's completely false. You know, we are still looking to make data-driven decisions in what we do. And I think that's something where, you know, we've got to look at all of the information to solve a problem and solve that problem with all of the information that we can, whether it's old school, new school, whatever that is. I think that's something first and foremost that I want to make sure that I get out there. You know, we're still looking to make data-driven decisions and make smart decisions, you know, working through things. I think for us, it's just, you know, at the end of the day, we appreciate everything they brought to the table and what they did to help us move forward. And, you know, but at this time they weren't the right fits moving forward. And you know, we just it's something where we just made the change. So I don't think, you know, like as Rob said, we just, you know, concluded a long pitching meeting about where we're going to go, how we can get there, and what the best way to get there is. And I think that's something where we are committed to looking at all sides of a problem and making sure that we make the best solutions with all the information.
David Bell and Nick Roth from earlier today on the day the Reds announced that David is getting a two-year contract extension. You heard Nick Roth address the timing of this, which I still think is a little peculiar. And look, they move on from Kyle Bodie last week. Kyle Bodie was starting to, by many accounts, achieve the kind of results that we had been looking for a while. And that's not to say that they can't continue to achieve those results, but they just let go a couple of people who are very data-oriented, very data-driven. And look, they may still embrace analytics, which they should. They still may embrace data, which they should. But what you say and what you do right now are entirely opposite things. And so you are being very fair if you are wondering specifically what direction is this team going in. And that goes beyond anything that Nick Kroll is going to have control over, because the question that I have is, what is the level of investment going to be in the team itself? Because the team that we've watched this year was not invested in. More importantly, fans were not invested in. You were not invested in last offseason. Room for your phone calls next, 513-749-1530 and 866-702-3776. Bengals game plan in 20 minutes. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. 13 away from 6, this is ESPN 1530. Don't forget Hard Rock Cafe inside Hard Rock Casino for the game on Sunday. I'll get there starting at noon. Game at 1 o'clock, good food, drink specials, enormous TVs, and if you're of age, you can gamble in the casino. So join me Sunday. Should be a lot of fun. Let's see. Grab as many as we can before we go. Jeff is calling from Virginia. Jeff, thank you so much for your patience. How are you?
Hey, Mo. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm all right.
I originally, the guy like two callers ago said there can't be a town in this country where there's worse management than the Reds and the Bengals.
Yeah.
I live outside of D.C., and there are plenty of Redskins and Wizards fans.
Oh, boy, that's a good one. That's, yeah, Daniel Snyder, yeah, that's, I can't.
Most definitely.
But he made up for by winning the World Series 2 years ago, and the Capitals have won a cup recently.
I didn't say the Nats or the Caps, but.
I mean, like, if you look at, I mean, you said, like, the Knicks and the Mets have a new owner, but the Knicks have been run poorly. The Jets have been kind of a joke from an ownership standpoint. But, I mean, in terms of a town that's essentially dominated by two teams, I struggle to say that someone's a bad owner. There have been successes under both here, but both current ownership groups have failed to yield the kind of results we're all looking for.
Yeah, well, and hold, one Reds thought, one Bengals thought.
Yeah.
Do you think the Reds picked this week because it's Steelers week by any chance?
I think that might be giving them too much credit for being calculated. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. I remember 2016 they announced Brian Price was coming back, and it was during, if not the last homestand, one of the final homestands. So, I mean, like, to a degree, I get it. Everybody's there covering the team. There's going to be a game, so let's go ahead and do it. It's weird that it wasn't done months ago. If they've believed in David Bell all along, why not just eliminate this as a thing for the last month or so of the season? That's strange to me.
Yeah, yeah. And on the Bengals, you know, Joe always says the right things, and he's great at these press conferences. He thinks before he answers. But he's won his entire life, and Zach has not necessarily won his entire life. Pure speculation. What do you think he's thinking on the inside?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. I don't know. I don't know that they've struggled to the degree that would cause him to really start to second guess whether he's working for the right guy. But I don't think anybody would be surprised if he is. I mean, you know, if I'm Joe Burrow, I'm kind of looking at the way they used me on Sunday. And Joe played poorly. There's no getting around it. But I'm kind of looking at the way they used me on Sunday going, all right, if you don't trust the dudes in front of me to block, then why was this the plan all along? Why weren't we more aggressive in addressing the offensive line? Or why don't we play some other guys, two of whom you drafted this year?
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, today, even today in the presser, he said, I'm going to be here for a long time, you know, blah, 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 blah. And again, it's 100% pure speculation. I just wonder what he's thinking on the inside. And I have a dreadful feeling, and I hope it doesn't turn out to be true, that Heinz Field ends up like FedEx Field last year. I can't even believe I let that thought escape into my head. But, you know, the other side of the coin is the drama queen will probably pull up an ambulance. They'll roll him out on a stretcher. He'll throw his helmet on, run out on the field and start warming up, and everybody will love him.
There's never been a development that I've taken less seriously than, oh, Roethlisberger's hurt, he might not play, he didn't practice. I don't take that seriously. But the Burrow thing is fair. He's on pace to be sacked like 77 times. I mean,
sure.
If he's hit as often as he's been hit so far this year over the course of the season, he will not make it. He will not get through all 17 games.
No, I think there's no doubt about that. So, you know, we'll just have to, you know, cross our fingers and hope he can, be, you know, maybe get a little more ability, maybe get a little more confidence in himself, and somehow or another that blocking gets better.
Yeah, no doubt. Jeff, thanks so much.
Thanks, Mo.
Bengals game plan, by the way, in just about 15 minutes. You know, the skepticism about ownership is earned. This was a weird. And I'm talking about it in past tense. They have 10 more games left, and mathematically, at least, a chance of getting to the postseason. This was has been a strange baseball season because of how we've talked about the role of Reds ownership in determining the level of success the team is going to have. We've talked about that more this year than at any point in my career, than at any point that I think than since Bob Castellini bought the team. So, okay, the manager is going to be the same. The coaching staff is going to be the same. And by the way, there's some good to that. Derek Johnson. Derek Johnson being given Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, and I assume Luis Castillo and Sonny Gray and some of the same guys we saw this year. That's there's some high end to that, man. But okay, so that's been settled. And, you know, I mean, Nick Castellanos is probably going to leave. Who's to say that they know what they're going to do with Mike Moustakas or Eugenio Suarez? Is Joey Votto going to be as productive next year as he was this year? What role does Nick Senzel have? But there's still some younger assets here. I think what we all are trying to figure out and what we all want to know is, what's the role of ownership going to be in constructing the club next year, in getting in the way of success, or increasing their likelihood of success? You know, Nick Kroll takes a beating, and Nick Kroll has fingerprints over some of the Reds' recent successes, to whatever degree you want to say the Reds have had recent successes. I don't believe he took over for Dick Williams last year and sat down and went, oh, boy, I can't wait to give away Raisel Iglesias and Archie Bradley. I'm going to guess at the trade deadline, Nick Kroll probably would have liked to have been more aggressive. Is ownership going to arm him this offseason? That more than anything else is the question. It matters more than who the manager is and what David Bell's lineup is. It just is David Bell and Nick Kroll going to be armed to succeed by ownership this offseason? You are not going to get that answer in today's press conference. I don't know that you're really going to get that answer verbalized. I think it's probably going to be more from what you see the Reds do. Bob Castellini hasn't really made himself available. He did a Q&A with P-Doc during spring training in which we made fun of it because it sounded like Doc was eating an apple, and he appears with Bill Cunningham on opening day. And I love Bill to death. Those two are boys. Just no other way to put it. And that question sort of looms over everything that happens over the next couple of months. We're done? Show's over? Gotta go? It's on tomorrow. I'm not here. I mean, Lance is taking all his damn time off. Taryn, don't look at me. I'm working at night. I would gladly do both shows, but guess what? They won't pay me for two. So back at it tomorrow for the inside pitch and extra innings. Austin and Jeff Carr doing the show tomorrow, I'm told. So you'll have that. Schedule said Chad. I was told something different. I don't know. They don't tell me what's going on around here. Here's what I can tell you. Dan Horton, Dave Lapham have Bengals game plan. 2 hours, wall-to-wall Cincinnati Bengals conversation as we get set for the Steelers on Sunday. Have a great night. Thank you for listening. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. And she make me breakfast almost every morning. And she take a nigga pick before she leave it, though.